That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We continue with the second hour of the Paracast with Gene and Chris. Leslie Kane joins us. This month, paperback edition of her best-selling book, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. There's also that History Channel documentary called Secret Access, UFOs on the Record. Premieres Thursday, August 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. But like with other cable shows, it'll be repeated and hopefully over and over again so you won't miss it. Maybe it'll be available in other countries. So you heard the question here, the president at the end of the food chain for information. What do you think?
I really have no idea, you guys. I mean, I don't know any more about that than anybody else who's read what's out there and has thought about it. I just have no idea. I sort of doubt that most presidents are briefed about UFOs, but I'm in no position to know any more about it than you or Chris or anyone else, so I have to pass on that one.
Of course, you got the other question here. Well, we have that legendary sighting from Jimmy Carter, but we heard nothing about UFOs once he became president. So,
right. Yeah. I don't, yeah. And again, people have reported that there was a meeting and he was in tears, you know, or something like that. And I just don't know. I mean, maybe he tried to make something happen. Yeah, I mean, that's a very interesting example. Also, maybe that once he became president, he just realized that he had so many other things to deal with that it just slipped away. But
president has to, they have to consider re-election prospects, too. And it may not be politically correct to profess an interest in UFOs. It might work at a campaign stop. But once they get into office, they have to look at the larger picture, the millions and millions of dollars of donations they expect to get to run a campaign. And so they don't talk about it anymore.
I wish Jimmy Carter, before he dies, would at least let us know exactly what happened. That would be the ideal scenario. He's the only one that really knows.
Wasn't Hillary Clinton supposedly curious about this?
Well, I mean, there's this whole thing with what they call the Rockefeller Initiative, where Lawrence Rockefeller was writing letters to Frank Press, I believe it was, the scientific advisor to the president. And, yeah, the Clintons responded to these letters from Rockefeller, and they invited him to their ranch. And, you know, Bill Clinton made some inquiries. Certainly he's curious about this, and he tried to get some information when he was president. But, you know, I think that the significance of all of that tends to be exaggerated. I've just never found it to be quite as compelling as a lot of people think it is. But I know that Bill Clinton is curious about this subject. I don't know as much about Hillary Clinton. And that Hillary Clinton, certainly being Secretary of State now, is not going to go anywhere near it.
Well, she's also supposedly indicated that she's not going to stay beyond the first term in the Obama administration, not going to run for office. So maybe as a private citizen, she might be, as they say, more forthcoming. But how the heck do you ever know?
We'll see what happens. I mean, once Bill and Hillary are both out of politics, you know, it just makes it a little more possible. But even for Bill Clinton right now, with his wife being Secretary of State, it certainly even limits his ability to, you know, he has to be careful about what he does and says, just in terms of protecting her.
He's also protecting the Obama administration. They want to keep the Democrats in the White House, so he has to watch what he says, even though he tends to be, you know, a little bit loose-lipped sometimes. Listen.
But not about UFOs, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, indeed. Okay, so we have all the people still demanding disclosure. As a matter of fact, Chris was mentioning,
I don't think disclosure is the correct demand to make.
Okay.
That's the bottom line, as I was saying earlier. I mean,
sure.
I think that word should be dropped from the lexicon, quite honestly. I mean, it implies that there's a secret that's being held, that the U.S. government knows that we're being visited by extraterrestrials, and that disclosure, by definition, means the government's supposed to announce that, yes, we are being visited by extraterrestrials. I mean, that is not the appropriate thing to ask a politician to do. They're going to run far away from any letter making a request like that, or any letter that states that we are being visited by extraterrestrials. I mean, they just don't, they're not going to accept that. You have to ask them to, as I said, you want an investigation into this. We want to find out what this mystery is all about, but you can't claim that we already know what it is when we don't.
Well, Stephen Bassett has come up with a new term, which I think is kind of curious, called the truth embargo. And now he's championing the ending of the truth embargo. And again,
that still implies that
exactly
the government has guilty knowledge.
That's the same. It's the same thing. I mean, that he's been touting that term since he started. The same thing as the word disclosure, truth embargo. I mean, you know, truth embargo on what? What's the truth that he's talking about? It's the same thing I just said, that the extraterrestrials are visiting us.
Okay. Well, does Leslie Kane at this point think that ET is visiting us?
Well, I mean, I certainly think, you know, it's a possibility. You can't rule it out. When you look at the totality of the evidence that we have, I mean, you know, nobody in their right mind is going to say that they can't possibly, well, I guess that's not true. The debunkers will say that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm totally open to that possibility, and I certainly think it's a rational hypothesis, just like the people that wrote the Cometa report did and the other generals that have written for my book and, you know, very high-level people all agree that that is a real possibility. And problem is, though, we need to find definitive proof that is the kind of proof that will satisfy the status quo, that will satisfy the scientific community before it's going to be accepted as an actual reality. And until that point comes, you know, for us to just jump ahead and assume that that's what's happening is counterproductive. It just doesn't interest the scientific community to come on board when we act as if we've already solved the problem. And since a lot of them can't find it very hard to accept that we could be visited anyway just because of the laws of physics, it makes it even harder to, you know, shove that in their face. You just can't do it. Obviously, I believe that that's a significant possibility. I mean, how can you not believe that? I mean, there's not a lot of choices when you rule out all the other possibilities.
Of course, you don't consider the exotic possibilities, interdimensional, another race coexisting with us on this planet, the so-called crypto-terrestrials. You don't really pay attention to that, do you?
Well, that's not, I mean, I do. I certainly think the interdimensional thing is, to me, it sort of all fits in one realm of something that, you know, is undiscovered and it's otherworldly. But, you know, I don't know any more than anyone else about what these things could be. My focus is really, as a journalist, is to present what we do know about them, what the evidence is that the phenomenon is real, how it behaves, what it looks like, what is the documentation for it, and then I've got to leave it up to the experts, the scientists, to figure out the explanation for it. And, you know, so I'm not in any position to know any more than anyone else. It's just my opinion, really, about what they actually might be. But, I've talked to so many high-level people who, I mean, they just feel, I mean, it seems to be that for us humans, you know, the ET hypothesis seems the easiest one for us to accept. But who knows if that doesn't necessarily mean that's all that's going on, but it just sort of seems to be the one that we gravitate towards. It's the easiest one. You know, we got planets out there that have maybe, you know, we're discovering more and more planets, and it just seems to sort of fit for the way people think, but who knows what's going on out there that's way beyond that we don't know anything about. So,
just parenthetically, what do you think about the way we've cut back so much on space exploration? Certainly, you know, it's water everywhere. It seems like more and more places out there have water, the prospects of life, and we don't seem to care anymore.
It's sad to me. I just get thrills when every time I read about more of these Goldilocks zone planets and so on. To me, it's a huge priority, but I guess in the times we're dealing with now, the economic issues we're dealing with now, a lot of people don't feel that way. They want the money to go elsewhere.
Maybe it'll take ET, if there is an ET, to land here and say, here we are, now you can't deny that we exist.
That would be wonderful. I guess, hopefully it would be wonderful if they're benevolent.
And not just preparing for whatever they're going to prepare for. The book, again, is called UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. In paperback this month, the History Channel special coming up on the 25th of August. We'll have more of that, but we'll also have coming up next your questions, listeners, on the Paracast, so we're getting set for them. Chris is assembling the questions right now. We're talking to Leslie Kane with Gene and Chris on
the Paracast.
Have you been sitting on a few great domain name ideas but haven't locked them in for yourself? Good. Now you can buy them through the number one domain name registrar, Namecheap.com, as voted by the top tech blog Lifehacker. Just like the name says, you can buy domains cheap, as low as $2.99, and every new domain comes with WhoisGuard, our special privacy service, free for the first year. Now that you know, it's time to grab those domain names before someone else does. Namecheap.com. Go now. Namecheap.com.
Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Alan Olson with Midas Resources, senior gold and silver broker since 1978. Over the last 3,000 years, gold has been a storehouse of wealth and has survived nearly 500 paper fiat currencies. Since the 1970s, the fiat U.S. paper dollar has lost over 90% of its purchasing power and is decreasing every day. With the U.S. government that is bent on reckless spending, gold and silver are your only safe havens of protection for your hard-earned paper dollars. Please contact me, Alan Olson, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 127, with your questions or purchases. Let's work together to preserve your assets. 1-800-686-2237, extension 127. Again, 1-800-686-2237, extension 127.
The American people think they live in a constitutional republic. Land of the free, home of the brave. Right.
Just try those lines on the judge when you get a ticket or have to deal with a big bad IRS.
Instead, use EscapeHarassment.com. Since 1972, our volunteer group of researchers and educators have successfully taught how to escape tickets by law, and it works. Escape Harassment has three different steps to follow, depending on where you are in the ticket process. Learn how to escape tickets, IRS, or court proceedings before you go to court. For free, three-minute pre-recorded information and FAQs, call this toll-free number, 1-877-457-9009. That's 877-457-9009. Or go to EscapeHarassment.com and see our money-back guarantee. That's EscapeHarassment.com. Remember, Escape Harassment works.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amounts. Hurry. Go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy. The best you can buy.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you want to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out on iTunes.
So here's how it works. When we know we're going to have a guest on the Paracast, we open up a thread, a topic in our forums at forum.theparacast.com. That's forum.theparacast.com, entitled Questions For. So there was a thread there called Questions for Leslie Kane when we, and Chris O'Brien has been going through those questions, and we're going to read them unedited, which means we don't know what they're going to ask, and Leslie's going to be surprised, perhaps. But here we go, Chris.
Well, first of all, our former skeptical moderator, we do try to keep a moderating crew that runs the gamut of opinion about these subjects, and Angelo, unfortunately, can't stay on as our moderator because of job requirements, but he, of course, is quite a Paracast fan, and he posted the first questions, and I think you've already asked his first one, which is, how cool is Stephen Colbert? I think you already answered that one. He's pretty outrageous, and it
he's
was,
way
in my
cool.
opinion, yeah,
way cool.
And it was really cool for him to have you on the show for such a controversial topic like that. But Angelo's second question, being a skeptic, is, do you think it's possible that any of the cases in your book have more to do with misidentification than anything else? And up to this moment, nothing has convinced Angelo that UFOs are anything but misidentified objects. What convinced you that UFOs are not from Earth?
Well, you'd have to take each case, you know, separately to answer the question about what, you know, whether they could be misidentifications. By that, I'm assuming maybe misidentifications of some kind of man-made technology or some natural phenomenon or something explainable.
Correct.
And I think, you know, if you really look into these cases, the ones that I'm concerned about are just so thoroughly investigated with so many witnesses that I'd be interested to hear, is it Angelo, the person who wrote this
Angelo,
question?
Yeah.
Angelo's opinion as to what he would think could likely be that what that misidentification might be, say, in the case of Parviz Jafari's object that he saw over Tehran, or the object that was seen over Belgium, or, you know, I suppose it's always a possibility. I mean, it's always a possibility that every single, even the best UFO case is explainable. I mean, I'm not completely shut to that, but to me, the chances of that are so minuscule just because of how much is known about the objects that were observed. And you have very bright, skeptical people involved in the investigations. And, you know, it's hard to accept that in every single case, if there was an explanation for it, they would not have been able to find it because they tried, you know, as hard as they possibly could. People very well equipped to do so, to find explanations for these things with all the data at their disposal. You know, I just find it extremely unlikely that every case can be explained away like that.
Especially the Brazilian Air Force case. My goodness, that to me, those two pilots, boy, if they were observing something that was mundane and easily explained, it must be in a parallel reality, because I'll tell you, what they described did not conform to any possible misidentified mundane event and an object. So
I think that's true too for lots of cases. So,
well, your book is filled with them. That's why you collected these particular cases, because they mm-hmm. are so incredible that it would be very, very difficult to just explain them away. Now, you mentioned the Belgian case and the Belgian triangles in the 80s. We recently had a hoaxer come forward and say that he hoaxed one of the most famous of the triangle shots. The question is from Wicker Man, who's been a longtime poster and is now a new moderator for the Paracast. And he asks, what's your take on the Belgian triangle case now that a photograph related to it has turned out to be a fake? And then he has a follow-up on Rendlesham.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I was very dismayed, of course, when this guy came forward, because as you mentioned, that is one of the most famous UFO pictures. It's been studied in laboratories. I think there is still some question, and you know, the Belgian investigators are looking into this, and we don't have a lot of answers on it yet, but there's still a possibility that maybe it wasn't hoax. But let's assume that it was. It's just a very discouraging and very sad development. Nonetheless, that does not in any way affect the power of the case and all the other sightings that were reported and all the data that we have on the Belgian wave. I mean, that photograph was one particular incident, which if you want to look at it as a hoax, is now explained away. It's no longer part of the record. But we have all the other parts of the record that are unaffected by the fact that that photograph was a hoax. So, you know, you got to be careful to just separate that out. And the amount of data that we have that General Wilfred de Brouwer presents in my book on that Belgian wave is just phenomenal. it's unfortunate we've lost that the photograph, but as I said, there's lots of other information that hasn't been affected by the fact that that photograph is now suspect. To me, it's one of the most fascinating, most powerful cases we on record, just because of the fact that it was a wave, that because of the fact that the objects kept returning, and that the government of Belgium was so involved with it was in the investigation, very much in contrast to how the United States would handle something like they did in the Hudson Valley wave at a similar time period. So there's just a reams and reams of data that have been collected on these objects that were seen over Belgium. And I've been over there, and I've talked to the police officers and lots of the people involved who were witnesses to this case, and I've seen these notebooks of data that these scientists collected during the time that the wave was going on. I've talked at length with General De Brouwer. So, I mean, I have absolutely no doubt about the standing of this case. It's just a very unfortunate situation about the photograph, because I absolutely always loved that photograph. It's just mysterious to me how something can be analyzed in a laboratory as many times as that was and just have been styrofoam. I think that, you know, we still need to learn a lot more about what actually happened when they constructed that thing, and it's just kind of mind-blowing to me. But we don't have the answers to it yet completely, so I'm waiting to hear more from the Belgian people that are working on it.
Okay. Here's one concerning the Rendlesham case. And Wickerman asked, does Jim Peniston's ever-evolving story change your opinions about Rendlesham or even about your opinion of Peniston?
Yeah, I mean, after they're talking about the numerology, the numbers that he downloaded into his brain, that whole thing, probably.
Well, there's a bunch of things that have been added to the whole thing, revelations that have come out as the story gets more and more details to it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that since the binary code thing, that's what it was, I haven't followed anything that happened after that. But, you know, I don't know what to make of it, except that it's far out enough that it's not something. For instance, if I was writing the book today and I had Jim Peniston in it as a witness, I would not include any of that material, because it's just, it's not something that can really be relied on in terms of heavy proof. And so, you know, I mean, I don't know what to make of it. I'm not going to say it's not true or not true. I'm just going to say that within the realm of the kind of data that I work with, that kind of material is not going to work. And I'm not in a position to comment on Jim Peniston as a person. I mean, I know him and I respect him, and I also know that he was very affected by what happened to him and has many lasting effects as a result of that. So that's about as far as I can go. I certainly respect and, you know, his initial account of what happened, which he beautifully wrote about in the book from his, you know, his own experience of what it was like when he saw that thing sitting on the ground and touched it and everything. Okay.
We have Leslie Kane. You're listening to Gene and Chris on
The Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans the galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaways. A novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
Hey Brian, if you could do just one thing today to ensure your family's food security, what would it be?
That's easy, Bill. I'd head straight to soupbeansurvival.com.
Soupbeansurvival.com?
I know, Bill, it sounds crazy, but this ancient secret has been around for over 8,000 years, and it truly is nature's super survival food.
Really, Brian? The number one survival food? Well, certainly the forgotten survival food.
Absolutely, Bill. The folks at soupbeansurvival.com scoured our planet to find the very best heirloom seeds, to truly find nature's super survival food.
Brian, these aren't grocery store beans, are they?
No way, Bill. You're not going to find these beans in any grocery store. These are the absolute highest quality beans in the world. Visit soupbeansurvival.com. That's soupbeansurvival.com for all the information you're going to need for nature's super survival food.
Big Berkey water filters are in high demand. Storable foods are also in high demand. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has always kept our focus on the Berkey water filter products, but increasingly, our customers have been asking for storable foods. After months of research, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com now offers great-tasting, long-lasting, storable foods. These ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches. All you do is just add water, and because they're sealed so well, they come with a 25-year shelf life. Combine our Berkey water filters, which are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water with our storable foods, and you have a winning combination. Remember, we offer free shipping on every order over $50, and GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY today.
You know that drinking pure, high-alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health, and most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops, available only at AlkaVision.com, combine a unique formula of most alkaline minerals available. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops alkalize your water, ridding the body of harmful toxins and acid, helping you to regain your energy and health. Alkalizing your water by simply adding 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops helps the body to rid itself of acidic waste, increases oxygen, and raises the pH of your body to optimal levels. And bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
We have Leslie Kane with Gene and Chris in the Paracast answering your questions. But there's one I'm going to ask right now, which kind of follows from the previous question in the previous segment of the show, Leslie, and that is, have you found that any of the information that you included in the book, maybe you regret that decision now because of new developments? Anything at all?
No, I don't think the only thing that's come up is this Petit Rochin, the Belgian Triangle photograph. You know, that's come up since the book came out. Don't think there's anything else. I mean, there were a few small errors that were corrected for the paperback, you know, just things like an aircraft being referred to by the wrong number or something like that. But nothing in terms of the actual data that I can think of that's been questioned or that's been, you know, that I have any regrets about. No.
And what about the book, the conclusions, the presentation? Would you make any changes today if you were doing that book all over again?
I think I might be a little more, have a little more sense of the difficulty of changing government policy, although I still hold that vision as strongly as I did when I wrote the book. But I've sort of been out in the field a little bit more since then and, you know, have a little bit of a different perspective on what's involved in doing that than I did when I wrote the book. That's really the only aspect of it, I think, that I've kind of learned more about since the book was written. That's really going to be a more of a struggle than I might have thought, but nonetheless, I still hold the vision as being the ultimate goal that I have in the book, which is that we have a small agency set up somewhere or a small office somewhere within government to manage the subject. And I, you know, as a long-term goal, I think that's realistic, but it's going to take maybe a lot more effort than I might have imagined at the time. But, you know, it's still pretty much the same, though, the same vision, the same ideal that I had at the time when I wrote it.
We have a lot of questions. I'm going to go ahead and run through some of them.
Sure.
This one comes from a longtime poster, Fascist Cardan, who's been a poster since July 2009. And he asks a series of about four different questions. I'll throw the first one out here. Do you really feel that by applying pressure for UFO investigation on the political segment of society, you're following the right course of action? Wouldn't it be more important to, for instance, divulge these good sightings and data in universities and colleges, places where future and present scientists and thinkers work?
Yeah, well, I think both are important, and I'm kind of trying to do both simultaneously. I think we need to hit up the political establishment and the scientific establishment, ideally if we can bring them together in some way, because they do intersect in that in order for scientists to get grants and to get to have the subject have the kind of credibility that it needs for them to take it on, you know, the government's going to have to change its position on the subject matter. So the two are very closely linked. But, yes, I definitely think that direct outreach needs to be made to scientists as well as to government officials. And I'm doing that to the extent that I can do it, and that I encourage everyone to do it.
Right. Well, how about military personnel? They're usually regarded as top-drawer witnesses. But have you ever felt that some of them may be answering to interests that go beyond the simple, sincere truth? And he gives the illustration of counterintelligence and disinformation are the building blocks of the intelligence community. And sometimes it seems that some of the military witnesses have ulterior motives behind their stories.
Yeah, I mean, I don't personally feel that that's the case with the witnesses that I worked with in putting together this book. You know, I suppose there's always a possibility that I've been deceived by them, but I sincerely doubt that that's the case. It doesn't mean that that never happens, but I think the cases in the book that I know many of the witnesses very well. I think they're quite straightforward. There are other witnesses that have corroborated what the one person has said. The case is well known. It's well documented. So I really don't have the sense that there's any kind of ulterior motive in these particular cases, which isn't to say that that never happens, but not within my experience.
Well, that kind of leads to the next question, which is, as a journalist, how do you deal with your colleagues' work regarding the UFO phenomena? Have you ever found yourself in a position where you felt compelled to criticize the lack of rigor and objectivity of other journalists' work?
Well, the sad thing is there really aren't many other journalists working on this. I mean, you know, you have a story occasionally by a journalist, but I don't know of any other journalists that are really focused on it. It depends, I guess, how you identify the word journalist. But certainly, you know, I don't like it when I see reports made that are not rigorous. I mean, I don't think that that's, you know, but I'm not sort of out there criticizing other people. I try to not do that, actually. So.
Well, are you seeing less of the giggle factor at the end of, let's say, regional television broadcasts? Obviously, there is a kind of a toxicity around the subject, or there has been for many years. Are you seeing a change in mainstream journalistic attitudes towards the subject?
Well, I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, certainly in the interviews that I've done with the mainstream, that giggle factor has not been there. I mean, absolutely not. You know, the Fox News stuff, and I did three or four shows on Fox, and MSNBC I did a show with. That just hasn't been there. You know, and I think a lot of what you see often is when you see television news cover a UFO story, the anchors are the ones that do the quipping. You know, they make these stupid comments when they're going in and out of the story. That little green man, or they joke with each other or something like that. That seems to be quite common, and then they go ahead and they cover the story. So
isn't that part of the way that anchors are trained, though, that you have the serious news, but then you have the happy talk news, and you have to sound like you're having a great time? Isn't it fun after we just reported a serious traffic accident or some kind of weather disaster? So now we're going to laugh about something. Here's the UFO subject.
Exactly. That's exactly how they play it. You're right. And then they might cover some local sighting or something like that. And they might do the coverage decent.
Yeah, exactly.
Decent,
that was my point.
The anchors like to surround it with sort of little jokes and stuff. I don't think that has changed all that much, you know. But I just know that when I'm interviewed and I'm talking about my book, I really haven't sensed that kind of attitude going on among the people I've been dealing with in the media, which is, of course, makes me very happy. But and I think the media is certainly very kind of interested and open in the subject, certainly different than 10 years ago when I started out in this. I mean, there's no comparison. So that, of course, is positive, but you still have this problem of the giggle factor within the media, without a doubt.
Now, here's another question I'll throw in before Chris continues with the ones from our listeners. And that is, you find more and more these days, and it's been true for a long time, but I think more frequently now, when they have so-called UFO conferences, events where they have loads and loads of really serious researchers, and they throw in a few of the woo-woo crowd to get in there to bring people to attract an audience, doesn't that denigrate from the serious nature of the presentations?
I absolutely agree with you. I mean, I have such an issue with conferences for that reason. And, I spoke last year at the International UFO Congress. I think I saw you there, Gene, actually, in Phoenix. And this, of course, is a big issue. And I've talked to the organizers, is like, how do you – the problem that they have is if they don't have some of these sort of woo-woo types, and they also have this room with all these crazy, stuff going on, selling – alien sculptures and all this wild stuff that goes on I forget they have the name for that room. But,
It's the vendor room.
The vendor room, yeah. And I've had so many discussions with these people about the problem is that they can't afford to put on the conference if they don't have a certain amount of that, because that's so much of what brings people in and sells tickets. And so they're sort of stuck with this dilemma. I mean, unless you have somebody willing to fund conferences that are going to all be, 100% serious people, if you're going to do that, you have to have some source of funding, because otherwise you're not going to get enough people to make it work. That's the problem. So they're sort of stuck with having to include a certain percentage of that just to make the conference happen at all.
Well, MUFON apparently is going into that now. MUFON is adding some of the woo-woo crowd. But maybe the other situation or the other problem in UFO research is that we need someone who is good at marketing, selling the message, using modern marketing techniques and still keeping it serious. There can't be a dichotomy between those two approaches. We have Leslie Kane. I'm Gene Steinberg. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved, guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
If you drive for a living, you don't get paid to stop or wait in line. Keep your wheels moving with PrePass. Bypass way stations. Fly by port of entry facilities. Stay moving at highway speed while the guy without PrePass waits in line. Save time, save money. Call 888-401-PASS to try PrePass free. That's 888-401-PASS.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
Heart and Body Extract continues to receive positive testimonials from people who have experienced amazing results, like Reed.
I just wanted to send you a quick but a very big thank you for Heart and Body Extract. I've been on the formula for nearly a month now, and the improvement in the circulation of my leg has been simply amazing.
Reed was facing a tough choice.
I was facing surgery due to the severity of 100% blocked arteries in both my legs. And my decision, waiting for surgery, to say no and try Heart and Body Extract instead has been thankfully the right decision.
And the result?
I can now walk up steps without noticeable pain.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305. Or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hello, this is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
With Leslie Kane on the PowerCast with Gene and Chris, I raise the issue of the marketing message. I mean, we have a company like Apple that knows how to sell their gear, and they can do it in an entertaining, informative way without unduly hyping what the product does. I don't think they do as much hype as some other companies do. So the question here is, can we do market research? Can we bring in marketing people to UFO research to explain how we get the message across without the presence of the crackpot, fringe, woo-woo element?
Sounds like a good idea, Gene.
No, that's not my job. I don't know anything about that.
It always boils down to somebody to fund these kinds of things.
Yeah. Where's Lawrence when you really need him?
Exactly.
He was like one of the true pioneers in the billionaire club set that was willing to pony up some money. Of course, he funded the Peter Storck Symposium.
Right.
The only top-notch scientists basically were involved in, and it is a problem.
We need a new Lawrence Rockefeller out there. We really do.
Yeah, we do. And going to MUFON's 2011 symposium here a number of weeks back, I was a little dismayed at not only some of the vendors, but as we have discussed, which surprised me, actually. But the whole idea and the theme behind the conference, having a person like Jim Sparks, who, of course, tells a very interesting story and has an interesting claim of contact, but to have that as part of a scientific organization with a mandate to scientifically investigate this puzzling phenomena, I just found it pandering to, as you were saying before, Leslie, the rank-and-file people out there that are attracted by the bells and whistles and the glitz and the pop culture view of all these events and subjects. And I developed a rash. I couldn't find where to scratch it. I didn't have any calamine lotion. It just made me very uncomfortable. And unfortunately, this seems to be the direction that conferences are going in. Other than getting someone to bankroll or fund a serious type of examination open to the public, I mean, what other recourse do we have? Do we have to be schizophrenic about it and appeal to the woo-woo crowd just to pay the bills? Or can we successfully do scientific research in this subject in a serious way, and you know, factor out all that, you know, the plastic alien toys and the alien lighters and the alien masks and the whole crystal, you know, healer crowd. I mean, is there any way that we can separate these two?
I wish we could more and more, because that's certainly my goal in the way I approach the subject, is to completely separate it. And, you know, I have an issue with the conferences for that very reason. I also understand the dilemma that they're in, because if they can't get people to attend, then the conference is a failure. It doesn't happen. I don't know how to answer that problem. I mean, I just don't know what to do about it. But I can't stand all that stuff that you're talking about. I mean, it just to me is so irrelevant and so negative in terms of the subject matter and what we're trying to do to bring credibility to it, that it's
exactly
makes me ill. It makes me get a rash, just like you said.
Well, can't you have just pop culture there anyway with E.T. and everything, but keep the lectures, the presentations serious? So you kind of...
Well, I think that's pretty much what they tried to do at the International UFO Congress, although I don't know if there were some... I think there were some sort of far out lecturers, and you know, these are the lecturers that are the more far out are the ones that
are the
most
popular ones.
I mean, the whole UFO conference circuit thing appeals to a certain crowd, and what we need are conferences that are speaking to a whole different crowd. I mean, if we're talking about a scientific conference, you know, you have to imagine it not including the audience that would go to these other conferences. But we need to reach people outside of that world anyway. I mean, the people that go to these conferences are the converted. You're preaching to the converted anyway. You know, everybody just goes there and has a good time, and they're all, you know, believers, if you want to use that word anyway. But, you know, the conferences that are important are the ones that can reach beyond that to people, you know, that wouldn't normally be involved with the subject and really try to elevate it to a scientific platform. But in order to do that, of course, you've got to have the scientists and you've got to have the funds to do the conference and all the things that it takes to make something like that happen.
But we do have popular scientists who come on the air, like a Michio Kaku, who could present advanced physics. And it's entertaining, and maybe we need to develop that kind of talent there. And I still think that with proper marketing, we could sell the message, because it's an incredibly compelling message here. We have strange things going on there. We have all of these strange craft. They're seen on radar. They're photographed. They leave traces. This is the most incredible mystery of our times. And if we sell the message, and speaking of getting millionaires, we have all these very rich people out there giving away money. We have Bill Gates. We have Warren Buffett. Imagine if they each give $1 billion towards UFO research. Has anyone tried to approach them?
Not that I'm aware of. No. I mean, I you know, I have to get more serious myself about fundraising. So I've been preoccupied with other things this summer, but that's sort of something on my agenda for the future, is to see what can be done in that realm. We'll see what happens. But that's the kind of thing that has to happen if we really want to take this to another level. I mean, we need the government, shift in government attitude, shift in government policy. We need a scientific reorientation towards this, and we need sources of funds. That's it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's ask another couple of questions here. This one comes from a fairly new forum poster at theforum.theparacast.com. His name is Senshi. I'm assuming it's a he. Major Donald Keough shaped the UFO scene by introducing the concept that the military is concealing information from us on flying saucers, putting the military in a very defensive position. With its efforts at maintaining military secrecy, how much of an extra problem has the government caused over the years? It's kind of a strange question, but I think I understand where he's coming from.
What does he mean, extra problem? You mean because of, he's saying that...
Because of something the military is doing on their own. In other words, the military may be responsible for a great deal of the secrecy, and this is causing the government a problem when it comes to addressing some sort of disclosure-type information or revealing the full extent of what the government knows. Maybe it's not the government. Maybe it's actually the military.
The military, I think that certainly the military, you know, when these events happen, we certainly know this from the cases in the 60s, late 60s, where the nuclear missiles were affected, the silos were shut down, and things like this. I mean, the military response to any kind of national security event is going to be to want to keep it quiet. whether it be a UFO event or something else. They have lots of reasons to, you know, be very cautious about publicizing anything that's in any way threatening.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's all kind of information that the military has withheld about events involving UFOs. I would make total sense that there would be that kind of withholding of information. And, of course, people have tried over the years through the Freedom of Information Act and other ways to try to get some of that information, but we have no idea to what extent a lot of that is locked up someplace.
Right.
And I'm assuming that there is more information than we've been made aware of. I can think we can assume that.
Well, here's a follow-up question from Sentry. Do you believe that the claims that the military has exploited the UFO myth as a cover story for secret projects? A bit of a softball question there for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that has happened. I mean, I can't think of the specific cases, but, you know, where they like to, it's very convenient for the military if they're testing some kind of secret technology and somebody says it's a UFO. That's kind of a convenient way for them to hide whatever it is that they're doing. That would make sense to me. I think
that follow, though, Leslie, that that's a deliberate effort in some cases, that you want people to think it's a UFO?
Maybe so, if you don't want them to know what you're doing.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just convenient. If you're testing something that, you know, is still a secret, it's... But all a UFO is something unidentified anyway, so I don't know how much of a cover it is. But, yeah, if people can start carrying on about, oh, I saw a UFO, it kind of lets them off the hook in terms of having to explain what, you know. It's just a convenient hiding device.
I think it goes deeper than that, Leslie. I think what they want to do is ascertain the psychological impact of certain secret aerial technologies, to see how many people actually report it to their sheriff, to see if that report is picked up by the local media, and whether a wave of these types of misidentified sightings are picked up by the national media. I think that there's some sort of psychological gauging program going on inside the military-industrial complex to ascertain the psychological effectiveness of just trotting something out without actually having it, you know, toss bombs around or fire missiles. I personally have seen conventional craft lit up like Christmas trees in the San Luis Valley, and if I hadn't been 5 miles away, if I'd been even 10 miles away, it would have looked like a huge 300-foot plus-sized UFO flying at very low altitude over the valley floor. So
I'll tell you what, Chris, we have to do the break. We have Chris O'Brien's the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. Our guest is Leslie Kane. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.